people like Chris and the church have different gifts than my gifts, and keeping us straight financially, and that's a good update for us. And, you know, just a reminder of that before the message, we call this Reaching in Love on purpose. It really is an effort to make room for others. We love the church family we have, but we always want to be accommodating, and so creating parking for others and other space, that's what that whole effort's all about. Well, now let's turn our attention to Joshua chapter 1. If you'll join me there. If you're new to the Bible, you're welcome here as well. In fact, we're especially excited you're here. The page number for Joshua 1 is right there in the bulletin there, and you can take the Bible from the rack in front of you, and you can follow along here in Joshua chapter 1. It's the sixth Bible, book of the Bible. You can find it there. We've been in a series talking about fear, and we'll take that on again today. Well, it was wintertime in Alabama, and we had announced to our church there that we had experienced God's call to go to Central Asia. And so we were in those final days in Alabama, and Rex and Kim Cresswell, dear friends of ours, invited us to their farm, maybe for a final time. And while we were there on their farm, their children, Brad and Kelly, were on a four-wheeler spinning around on their frozen pond. It looked like a lot of fun, you know, figure eight, just all kinds of spinning around on the ice. And Rex, being a good host, leaned over to me and said, "Hey, Jim, you want to take a turn out on the pond?" Here was my response. No, I do not. I told him, I've watched too many episodes of Rescue 911, you know, where you watch people plunge through the ice into the cold water. You know, I was thinking, this isn't Alaska ice. This is Alabama ice. This can't be so thick. Then Rex looked at me and he said, "I don't understand you, Jim Booth. You take your family to Central Asia, but you won't go out on my pond?" I said, "Rex, there is a huge difference. God called me to Central Asia. He did not call me onto your pond. I did not get on that thing." Listen, knowing God's will makes a huge difference, doesn't it? When you're convinced that God has called you to a task, oh, then you can be courageous. When you know that what God's calling you to do is has you right in the center of his will, then you can have absolute confidence. When I responded to the call to ministry as a high school senior, somebody who was already in ministry gave me this little quote. He said, "Who God calls, he also enables." I never heard that before, so I scratched it down on a post-it note, stuck it up on my desk where I'd have my daily time reading the Bible, and I would count on that. All right, God, you call me. What am I doing in ministry? You're calling me, so I'm going to trust that you'll enable. And you know what's been true throughout all the years? Absolutely, God has been faithful to do that very thing. So here we are in Joshua 1. My prayer is this, that as we consider taking on this topic of fear, especially the realm of inadequacy, inferiority, that all of us would shake off any timidity in our lives, that we would rise up with fresh courage to accomplish whatever it is God wants us to do in our individual lives, in our families, in our church, even to the ends of the earth. And so here we are, Joshua 1. Let's pick up in verse 1. "Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, 'Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross the Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I'm going to give to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I've given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, and all the lands of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I've been with Moses, I'll be with you, and I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you, and do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Here we are at this pivotal moment in history where Moses, the great leader of Israel, has died. And now this leadership transition is on, and it's a daunting time for the entire nation, but it's especially daunting for the man who must take Moses' place. And so as Joshua steps up to take the leadership role that God has assigned for him, he's keenly aware of two things. He knows these are big shoes he's going to fill, and this is a big assignment. Consider the big shoes. He has to fill the shoes of none other than Moses. In Deuteronomy 34, we find this description of Moses. It says, "No prophet has arisen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face for all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, and for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel." So there's never been a leader like Moses in Israel, and Joshua has to come in and take his place as leader. Oh, that's a huge assignment. God had used Moses greatly. God had met with Moses one-on-one. Even Moses was chosen to be the lawgiver as God gave the law to Moses. Remember him carrying the tablets down to the people? This is an amazing man that God chose to use, Moses. Can you imagine how intimidating it would be to have to fill his place? Maybe you've had that experience at work. It's one thing to take over for somebody who wasn't performing well, and you come in to lead, and everybody's like, "Hey, we're so glad you're here. It wasn't going well before." But maybe you've had the experience, you follow somebody who's like, "That guy was awesome. That guy, he had no weaknesses." And you come in to lead in his place, and you're like, I don't know if I'm up to this. Well, that was Joshua's assignment. Maybe you think about it in sports. I'm a Duke basketball fan, and you know, you think about Coach K. What's going to happen when this legendary coach retires? I don't care so much right now about how the team does, but can you imagine the poor coaches have to come in behind him? You got to measure up. I mean, that's something like what Joshua's got. Moses had done so nobly well, and Joshua's got to fill his shoes. Well, not only that, it was not just big shoes, but a huge, big assignment. I mean, just to lead a nation is huge. But at a time like this, because now they're on the verge of taking possession of the promised land. They were going to have to take it by force, by the way. It wasn't that God just said, "I'm going to give it. There's going to be no work to do." This is, you're going to go in and you have to conquer place after place to take possession of what I've given to you. Maybe somebody might question, well, this seems to be a bad time for God to allow a leadership transition. I mean, maybe even Joshua might have had the thought in his own head, it might make more sense for us to go ahead and finish the job under the proven leader. We've already seen how God blesses Moses. We've already seen the capable leader he is. And so maybe it would be better just to stay here under him. But listen to this, Joshua actually was not a poor choice at all. Even though everybody else might have wondered about it, Joshua was awesome. Here's what we know about Joshua. He was an aide to Moses. In fact, we saw in verse 1 here, he's described as Moses' servant. In Numbers 28, we're told that he was the attendant of Moses from his youth. So wherever you saw Moses, you often saw Joshua. And so that gave Joshua a front row seat to all these miracles of God that were going on for decades in the nation of Israel. So he's got to see that. He also got to see Moses handle all these leadership challenges of leading such a fickle people as the children of Israel were. Not only was he a faithful servant to Moses, but we also remember him as a courageous spy. Do you remember that occasion? Years earlier, when they were supposed to take the promised land more recently after coming out of Egypt, the 12 spies went out. 10 spies came back with a faithless report that infected the whole nation with fear. And everybody's saying, "I know God said he'd give us the land, but he can't really deliver because the cities are too big and the people are too big and we're like grasshoppers in their sight." Remember that? Those were the 10 spies. But it was Caleb and it was Joshua that gave a minority report that was the report of faith. And here's how it went. We read about it in Numbers 14. Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, they tore their clothes when they heard the faithless report of the others. They tore their clothes and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey." Listen to this. "Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." But the story doesn't end there. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. So you think about Joshua, all he'd already been through with Moses, and being a faithful spy, bringing back the faith report, he knew Moses well. He knew these often faithless people well. But above all, he knew God well, And he was willing to step out in faith. And so here's this calling that was given to Joshua. But along with the calling, and this is good news, God gave assurance. So with the calling, he coupled it with assurance to Joshua. Here's good news for us. When God calls us to do things, it also comes with the same sense of assurance. Look with me at the assurance God gave to Joshua with this huge assignment. Verse 3, every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I've given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. Those are words of assurance. Verse 5, no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I've been with Moses, I will be with you. And I love this, I will not fail you or forsake you. Joshua, I'm calling you to fill big shoes and a big assignment, but I'm going to give you assurance it's going to work out just fine. Verse 9, have I not commanded you be strong and courageous? Do not tremble or be dismayed. Here it is, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Every time God calls you to do something, every time you see in the scriptures there's something you should do, it's going to come with the same accompanying assurance. In other words, God's never saying to you, go out and do my will all by yourself and I hope it works out. When God calls you to do something, he's always telling you the same thing. I'm going to be with you. I'm actually going to accomplish my will through you. You just be obedient. You just step out in faith and I'll be there for you. There'll never be a moment when I'm not with you. There'll never be an occasion where you'll look and try to find me and I won't be there because I'm never going to abandon you. And apparently, Joshua needed this assurance because God's telling him, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous. Even the people later tell him, hey, Joshua, be strong and courageous. We don't see any moments of weakness in him, but evidently he needed it like almost everybody needs words like this. I say almost everybody because on occasion, you meet somebody who seems to lack no self-confidence. Some people seem just to strut out of the womb. Have you noticed? I mean, some kids come out. If you were to tell that little baby, some babies, hey, you're supposed to lead Israel, they say, of course, and every other nation. And give me that pacifier and that person's pacifier and those blankies. Stat. Chop, chop. You know, some people are like that. In fact, Joy, years ago, in another place, teaching in a school, she taught first grade at that time, and she told me about this one kid who was in trouble constantly. This kid feared nobody. And so one of those trips to the principal's office, this little six-year-old, he's there in front of the principal. It would have scared me to death when I was six, but not this kid. The principal said, if you have to come back to my office, you're not going to like what happens. The six-year-old said, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I still don't have that kind of moxie, do you? I don't have that. But some people have it. But listen, when we talk about having faith and having confidence, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about, hey, the rules don't apply to me. I don't care what you say. I don't fear anybody. We're not talking about that. That's kind of jerk-like behavior, right? We're not talking about more self-confidence. We're talking about a greater sense of God confidence. The idea is, listen, I know I'm nothing. I know I'm weak. I know I'm in over my head in the things that God's called me to do. But God is awesome, and I'm trusting in him. And if he's called me, I know he's going to come through because he's a promise keeper. And so here we go. Hey, do you struggle ever with inadequacy? Few people don't, but do you? Do you ever struggle with feelings of inferiority? Do you ever ask the question, who me do that? Well, you're in great company. I love how the Bible records people like us in here. Moses, we just talked about the greatest leader for Israel, how he's described, but Moses didn't start out that way. Do you remember? We read about it in Exodus 3 and 4. I reread it this week, and it's kind of embarrassing for Moses that two chapters of the Bible devoted to his calling and how God had to convince him to do it. Remember burning bush? What was the first question that Moses said when God said to Moses, you're going to deliver my people from Egypt? What did he say? First question is a question I would have asked. Who am I? Who am I to do that big thing? And then that wasn't enough, though, because when God says, hey, I'm calling you to do it, I can't speak well. And then he says, choose anybody else that you wish for the job other than me. We're told in Exodus 4, God started to get angry with him, and that's when Moses kind of straightened up and did what God called him to do. But listen, if you ever feel inadequate, if you've ever felt inferior, you're in great company. Jeremiah is another one of those. We're talking about a who's who list in the Bible. Jeremiah felt inadequate when God said, I've appointed you as a prophet to the nations, you know, from the time in your womb I've called you. Jeremiah's like, hey, I'm just a youth. I'm too young for such an assignment. And God says, you'll do it. You'll say everything I tell you to say. You'll go everywhere I tell you to go. We read about that in Jeremiah 1. How about Paul? We don't see a lot of timidity in Paul. But Paul never got over the fact that God would call him to ministry. Paul was never got over the fact that he was allowed to be a believer because he was such a violent aggressor, as he described himself, such a persecutor of the church that God would save him. He never got over that, so thrilled. And then to be called as an apostle, just amazed that God would do that in his life because it was all about God. Timothy, Paul would exhort Timothy, oh, don't have a spirit of timidity, be strong. And every Sunday I'll tell you that I'm in this list of people that needs to remind myself who God is. For years, it's been my move on a Sunday, before I ever get here, to go through this in my head. First of all, I ask myself this, am I filled with the Holy Spirit? So I go through this, be filled, be prepared, be strong and courageous. Every Sunday between every service, before I stand up and preach, because I'm not one of those that has an abundance of self-confidence. I wasn't wired that way. Now, that's turned out to my spiritual advantage, because when you don't have an abundance of self-confidence, then you're utterly dependent and desperate for God at every turn. And so it keeps you in that posture. God, you have to come through. If you're not here, I've got nothing. I need you to come through. So in study and in preparation and living out the faith, be filled, be prepared. And then if I'm filled and prepared, then I can be strong and courageous. Here's what I'm learning. The closer the walk with Jesus, the greater the level of confidence. You and I need that in our lives. Well, he gets these words of assurance that you and I can bank on as well. Also notice in here, with this calling, there are some commands that accompany the calling. Here we find several of them. We look at verse 2. Moses, my servant, is dead. Here's the first command. Now, therefore, arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I'm giving them to the sons of Israel. So the first command is obvious. Joshua, you will lead this people to this next big thing. It's now time to take possession of the promised land. You're going to lead them to do it. He tells them to be strong and courageous and to get after it. What I love about this is that Joshua did not hesitate there. That with the command to do it, where many others might have waffled, he did it. Verse 10 tells us this. I love how he jumped on the assignment. Look at verse 10. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you are to cross this Jordan to go in and possess the land which the Lord your God has given you to possess it. Don't you love that? That's decisive leadership. God, you've made it clear we're to do this. We're doing it. We're going to have to count on you, but we will be obedient to this. And so the first command was to go in and take the land. The second command of God here was that Joshua was to be a man of the word. Look at verses 7 and 8 again. He says here, the second part of verse 7, be careful to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or the left so that you may have success wherever you go. He tells him, don't let the word depart from your mouth. Meditate on your word all the time in your heart and be careful to do it. That's the second command. You and I should never be presumptuous. Well, I'm going to go do stuff and God's obligated to come through for me to make me successful. Even if I ignore his word, even if I disobey his word, he's obligated to bless me. That's not the promise here. It's conditional. Joshua, I'm going to be with you. Make sure you're biblical as you go and do the thing I've called you to do. Third command, and maybe this is the one that fits most what we're talking about with fear. Notice it's a command to be strong and courageous. It's a command that's repeated 3 times here in this talk that God's having with Joshua. Verse 6, be strong and courageous. Verse 7, only be strong and very courageous. And there it is in verse 9 again. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. This is important. Listen, when you and I face fear and these insecurities and these senses of inadequacy that are all so familiar to us, listen, don't excuse it, though. Of course, it's understandable that we have them, but don't let that be the final word. Don't excuse weak faith because God is commanding you to rise up and be strong and courageous. That's an equal command to being biblical. It's an equal command to go in and possess the land. Be strong and courageous. It's a command. It's not acceptable to remain weak, and certainly don't mistake timidity for humility. What's the difference between those? A lot of us, we're just wired that way. Hey, I'm nothing. I'm nothing in it myself. So I would delight to make a big deal about Jesus. But if we're not careful, that appropriate humility can sneak over and become sin in a very different form of timidity, where we could say, I'm so weak and insignificant that God could never use me. I'm so weak and ordinary that even if God said he's going to use me, I don't think he really knows what he's talking about, and I just better shrink back and not do anything. Maybe my life is to be just watching sports on TV. I can never be used for anything else. Listen, that's not humility. That's now disobedience. That's timidity and not something that you and I want to have in us. And so a person who has a sad sack thinking, it's not humility. That person has bad theology that God can't use you. What are you saying about God? You're not speaking humbly about yourself. You're actually insulting and dishonoring God. God can use you. If he used Joshua, if he used these others, he can use you and me as well. Well, what should we do in light of this? Since we're commanded to be strong and courageous, then here's what I would say. Be spirit-filled. Be biblical. And be bold to carry out the things that God is calling you to do. I'm sure I've told you this before, but when I was praying about becoming your pastor, I had some doubts about me in the process. And so I thought, do I have what it takes to feed people every week in preaching? Do I have what it takes? I knew I could speak because as a speaker with the IMB, I'd speak in churches around the country and that would go well, but to feed people every week, do I have what it takes? And I remember asking God about that. And here's what I felt like he was saying. Just in my soul, I felt like he was saying this. In response to my question, do I have what it takes? I felt like he was saying, no, you don't. You don't. But if you'll walk with me, I'll give it to you as you need it. And that's why it's a particular joy as I just walk with him every week, desperate for God every week, depending on God every week, to watch him provide, to watch him provide, to watch him provide. And you know, I haven't gotten to the point where I know he's going to do it. Okay, I got it from here, God. I was desperate before, but now I know I've got it within myself to do this. No, every week, it's got to be you. It's got to be you. And you, look, you're facing things yourself. It's daunting. I don't know how this is going to work, but listen, this God is faithful. Be faithful to him, be obedient, and trust in him. Let's pray.